Welcome to the Hackberry House of Chosun. My name is Bob. I'm reading today from a book of Charles Spurgeon's sermons called 12 Sermons for the Troubled and Tried. This particular sermon is called The Sweet Uses of Adversity. It is number 11 out of 12 in the book. And he uses as the text this time Job chapter 10, verse 2, where it says, "Show me wherefore thou contendest with me, you fight with me. And will God contend with man? If God be angry, can he not take away the breath of his nostrils and lay him low in the dust of earth? If the heart of the Almighty be moved unto hot displeasure, can he not speak in his anger? And will not the soul of man sink into the lowest hell? Will God contend? Will he set himself in battle array against his creature? And such a creature, the creature of an hour, a thing that is not, that is here today and gone tomorrow? Will the Almighty fight with the nothingness of man? Will the everlasting God take up the weapons of war and go out to fight against the insect of a day? Well might we cry out to him, 'After whom is my Lord the King gone forth? After a dead dog? After a flea? Wilt thou hunt the partridge on the mountain with an army? Wilt thou go forth against a gnat with shield and spear? Shall the everlasting God, who fainteth not, neither is weary, at whose reproof the pillars of heaven's starry roof tremble and start, will he become combatant with a creature?' Yet our text saith so. It speaks of God's contending with man. Ah, surely, my brothers, it needs but little logic to understand that this is not a contention of anger, but a contention of love. It needs, methinks, but a short sight for us to discover that if God contendeth with man, it must be a contention of mercy. There must be a design of love in this. If he were angry, he would not condescend to reason with his creature and to have a strife of words with him. Much less would he put on his buckler and lay hold on his sword to stand up in battle and contend with such a creature as man. He will all perceive at once that there must be love, even in this apparently angry word, that this contention must, after all, have something to do with contentment, and that this battle must be, after all, but a disguised mercy, but another shape of an embrace from the God of love. Carry this consoling reflection in your thoughts while I'm preaching to you. And if any of you who are, if you're saying today, "Show me wherefore thou contendest with me," the very fact of God contending with you at all, the fact that he has not consumed you, that he has not smitten you to the lowest hell, may thus at the very outset afford consolation and hope. Now, I propose to address myself to the two classes of persons who are making use of this question. First, I shall speak to the tried saint. Then I shall speak to the seeking sinner, who's been seeking peace and pardon through Christ, but who has not as yet found it, but on the contrary, has been buffeted by the law and driven away from the mercy seat in despair. First, then, to the child of God. I know I have, in this great assembly, some who have come to Job's position. They're saying, "My soul is weary of my life. I'll leave my complaint upon myself. I'll speak in the bitterness of my soul. I will say unto God, 'Do not condemn me. Show me wherefore thou contendest with me.'" Well, sometimes to question God is wicked, as the men of Beth Shemesh were smitten with death when they dared to lift up the lid of the ark and look into its sacred mysteries. So is it often death to our faith to question God. It often happens that the sorest plagues come upon us on account of an impudent curiosity which longs to pry between the folded leaves of God's great counsel book and find out the reason for his mysterious providences. But methinks this is a question that may be asked. Inquiring here will not be merely curious, for there will be a practical effect following therefrom. Tried saint, follow me, while I seek to look into this mystery and answer your question, and I pray you, select that one of several answers which I shall propound, which shall, to your judgment, enlightened by the Holy Spirit, seem to be the right one. You've been tried by trouble after trouble. Business runs cross against you. Sickness is never out of your house. While in your own person you are the continual subject of a sad depression of spirit. It seems as if God were contending with you. And you're asking, why is this? Show me why you contend with me. Well, my first answer, on God's part, my brother, is this. It may be that God is contending with thee that he may show his own power in upholding thee. God delighteth in his saints. And when a man delights in his child, if it be a child noted for its brightness of intellect, he delights to see it put through hard questions, because he knows that it will be able to answer them all. And so God glories in his children. He loves to hear them tried, that the whole world may see that there is none like them on the face of the earth. Even Satan may be compelled, before he can find an accusation against them, to resort to his inexhaustible fund of lies. Sometimes God, on purpose, puts his children in the midst of this world's trials. On the right, left, before, behind, they are surrounded. Within and without, the battle rages. But there stands the child of God, calm amidst the bewildering cry, confident of victory. And then the Lord pointeth joyously to his saint, and he saith, see, Satan, he's more than a match for thee. Weak though he is, yet through my power, he all things can perform. Sometimes God permits Satan himself to come against one of his children, and the black fiend of hell in dragon's wings meets a poor Christian just when he's faint and weary from stumblings in the valley of humiliation. The fight is long and terrible, well though it may be, for it is a worm combating with a dragon. But see what that worm can do. It's trodden underfoot, and yet it destroys the heel that treads upon it. And when the Christian is cast down, he utters a cry, rejoice not over me, O my enemy, for though I fall, yet shall I rise again. And so God pointeth to his child and saith, see there, see what I can do? I can make flesh and blood more mighty than the most cunning spirit. I can make poor, feeble, foolish man more than a match for all the craft and might of Satan. And what will you say to this third proof that God puts us through? Sometimes God does it, as it were, to himself enter into the lists. Let us wonder to tell it. God, to prove the strength of faith, sometimes himself makes war on faith. Think not that this is a stretch of the imagination. It's a plain, simple fact. Have you never heard of the brook Jabbok, and of that angel-clothed God who fought with Jacob there and permitted Jacob to prevail? What was that for? It was this. Thus had God determined, I will strengthen the creature so much, this will, that I will permit it to overcome its creator. Oh, what noble work is this, that while God is casting down his child with one hand, that he's holding him up with the other, letting a measure of omnipotence fail on him to crush him, while the like omnipotence supports him under the tremendous load. The Lord shows the world, see what faith can do. Well does the poet Hart sing of faith. He says, it treads on the world and on hell. It vanquishes death and despair. And oh, let us wonder to tell, it overcomes heaven by prayer. This is why God contends with thee, to glorify himself by showing to angels, to men, to devils, how he can put such strength into poor, puny man, that he can contend with his maker and become a prevailing prince like Israel, who as a prince had power of God and prevailed. This then may be the first reason. But let me give you a second answer. Perhaps, O tried soul, the Lord is doing this to develop thy graces. There are some of thy graces that would never be discovered if it were not for thy trials. Dost thou not know that thy faith never looks so grand in summer weather as it does in winter? Hast thou not heard that love is too often like a glow-worm that showeth but little light except it be in the midst of surrounding darkness? Dost thou not know that hope itself is like a star, not to be seen in the sunshine of prosperity, only to be discovered in the night of adversity? Dost thou not understand that afflictions are often the black foils in which God doth set the jewels of his children's graces to make them shine the better? It was but a little while ago that on thy knees thou wast saying, Lord, I fear I have no faith. Let me know that I have faith. But dost thou know thou wast praying for trials? For you cannot know that you have faith until your faith is exercised. Our trials, so to speak, are like wayfarers in a wood. When there's no intruder in the silent glades of the forest, the hare, the rabbit, and the partridge lie, and there they rest, and no eye sees them. But when the intruding footstep is heard, then you see them start and run along the green lane, and you hear the whirr of the pheasant as it seeks to hide itself. Now, our trials are intruders upon our heart's rest. Our graces start up, and we discover them. They had lain in their lair, and they had slept in their forms. They had rested in their nests, unless these intruding trials had startled them from their places. And I remember a simple rural metaphor used by a departed divine. He says, he was never very skillful at birds nesting in the summertime, but he could always find birds' nests in the winter. Well, now, it often happens that when a man has but little grace, you can scarcely see it when the leaves of his prosperity are on him. But let the winter's blast come and sweep away his withered leaves, and then you discover his graces. Depend upon it, God often sends us trials that our graces may be discovered, and that we may be certified of their existence. Besides, it is not merely discovery. It is real growth that is the result of these trials. There's a little plant, small and stunted, growing under the shade of a broad-spreading oak. Now, this little plant values the shade which covers it. Greatly does it esteem the quiet rest which its noble friend affords. But a blessing is designed for this little plant. Once upon a time, there comes along the woodman, and with his sharp axe, he fells the oak. And the plant weeps and cries, my shelter is departed. Every rough wind will blow upon me, and every storm will seek to uproot me. No, no, saith the angel of that flower, now will the sun get at thee. Now will the shower fall on thee in more copious abundance than before. Now thy stunted form shall spring up into loveliness, and thy flower, which could never have expanded itself to perfection, shall now laugh in the sunshine, and men shall say, well, how greatly has that plant increased? How glorious has become its beauty through the removal of that which was its shade and its delight. See you not then that God may take away your comforts and your privileges to make you the better Christians? Why, the Lord always trains his soldiers, not by letting them lie on feather beds, but by turning them out and using them to forced marches and hard service. He makes them ford through streams and swim through rivers and climb mountains and walk many a long march with heavy knapsacks of sorrow on their backs. This is the way in which he makes soldiers, not by dressing them up in fine uniforms to swagger at the barrack gates and to be fine gentlemen in the eyes of the loungers in the park. God knows that soldiers are only to be made in battle. They're not to be grown in peaceful times. We may grow the stuff of which soldiers are made, but warriors are really educated by the smell of powder in the midst of whizzing bullets and roaring cannonades, not in soft and peaceful times. Well, Christian, may not this account for it all? Is not thy Lord bringing out thy graces and making them grow? This is the reason why he is contending with you. Or another reason may be found in this. Number three, it may be the Lord contends with you because you have some secret sin which is doing you sore damage. Do you remember the story of Moses? Never a man better beloved than he of the Lord his God, for he was faithful in all his house as a servant. But dost thou remember how the Lord met him on the way as he was going to Egypt and strove with him? Why? Because he had in his house an uncircumcised child. This child was, so long as it had not God's seal upon it, a sin in Moses. Therefore God strove with him till the thing was done. Now, too often we have some uncircumcised thing in our house, some joy that is evil, some amusement that is sinful, some pursuit that is not agreeable to his will. And the Lord meets us often, as he did Moses, of whom it is written, "The Lord met him by the way in the inn and sought to kill him." Now search and look, for if the consolations of God be small with you, there is some secret sin within, perhaps. Put it away, lest God smite you still more sorely and vex you in his hot displeasure. Trials often discover sins. Sins we should never have found out if it had not been for them. We know that the houses in Russia are very greatly infested with rats and mice. Perhaps a stranger would scarcely notice them at first, but the time when you discover them is when the house is on fire. Then they pour out in multitudes, and so does God sometimes burn up our comforts to make our hidden sins run out. And then he enables us to knock them on the head and get rid of them. That may be the reason of your trial, to put an end to some long-fostered sin. It may be, too, that in this way God would prevent some future sin, some sin hidden from your own eyes, into which you would soon fall if it were not for his troubling you by his providence. There was a fair ship which belonged to the great master of the seas. It was about to sail from the port of grace, to the haven of glory. Before it left the shore, the great master said, "Mariners, be brave. Captain, be thou bold, for not a hair of your head shall perish. I'll bring you safely to your desired haven. The angel of the winds is commissioned to take care of you on your way." The ship sailed right merrily, with its streamers flying in the air. It floated along at a swift rate, with a fair wind for many and many a day. But once upon a time there came a hurricane, which drove them from the course, strained their mast until it bent as if it must snap in twain. The sail was gone to ribbons. The sailors were alarmed, and the captain himself trembled. They had lost their course. They were out of the right track, they said, and they mourned exceedingly. When the day dawned, the waves were quiet, and the angel of the winds appeared, and they spoke unto him, and they said, O angel, were you not bidden to take charge of us and preserve us on our journey? He answered, Yes, it was even so, and I have done it. You were steering on right confidently, and you knew not that a little ahead of your vessel lay a quicksand, upon which she would be wrecked and swallowed up quick. I saw that there was no way for your escape but to drive you from your course. You see, I have done it as it was commanded me. Go on your way. This is a parable of our Lord's dealings with us. He often drives us from our smooth course, which we thought was the right track to heaven, but there's a secret reason for it. There's a quicksand ahead. It's not marked in the chart. We know nothing about it, but God seeth it, and he will not permit this fair vessel, which he has himself insured, to be stranded anywhere. He'll bring it safely to its desired haven. Well, Mr. Spurgeon has some other points on that same head, but we don't have time to go there today. We will finish this up next time around. The sweet uses of adversity. You're going through some tough stuff? Charles has some reasons it might be happening. These are from the word of the Lord. He's not making this up. We get to continue that another time. Thank you for your attendance on the word of God. Realize as I look through the years and the numbers of the people that keep coming back that we have a lot of people in this audience who truly love the Lord and want to know His will, and are seeking for it, even in messages like this and Charles Spurgeon and many others. Keep seeking. The answers are there. Hey, we've got the works of several other great men of God on this website, their stories, their words. Got North Korea audios by the hundreds. I've got a study of the Quran and Muhammad and prophecy and through the Bible and a whole lot more. Please look around and check out the books that are there too. It's all for you. This is the Hackberry House of Chosun. Lord willing, we get to talk again real soon. Bye-bye.